Hello and welcome to the debate right here at Press TV. I'm Marzia Hashemi. Thanks so much for being with us. The Nassib border crossing from Syria to Jordan is in the hands of the Syrian government for the first time since 2015. This is quite significant for the Syrian army and its allies, and more importantly for the Syrian people, that this border area has been cleared of terrorists after all of these years. Stay with us as we take a look at what all of this means on this debate. We're going to cross over to Damascus, starting it all off with our correspondent, Muhammad Ali, who has been witnessing it all. Muhammad Ali, thanks so much for being with us. Well, tell us about today's events. And of course, you were there on the scene the last couple of days of what has been taking place.
Yes, I just arrived back from Syria's south, particularly from the Nassib border crossing between Syria and Jordan, which the Syrian army fully liberated after about 3 years of being occupied by various terrorist groups over there. The army is now in full control of that border crossing. Of course, the Syrian army at dawn, according to an army commander I spoke to, received orders to advance towards that important crossing and control. And this is what happened over there. The army was able to secure it fully. The Syrian army is aiming to continue its military operations further on this borderline and also west of Daraa. The Syrian army troops started an offensive backed by Russian Air Force last month in order to secure all of Syria south, not just the Nassib border crossing. And since that time, in less than 3 weeks, the army controlled about 72% of Daraa province in general, parts of Sweida countryside, and is aiming to continue west of Daraa in the direction of Al-Quneitra. Of course, this is a very also important area because over there, there are various armed groups, on top of which Daesh and the Al-Nusra Front occupying towns and villages that are bordering the separation line with the occupied Golan, where, as you know, terrorists have been getting support, logistic support, medical support from the Israeli side. And now, by closing the gateway, which is the Nassib border crossing that terrorists used for years for weapons smuggling and infiltration, the Syrian army is tightening the noose on the terrorists. Several towns have already started surrendering to the Syrian army, knowing that they have no chance of resisting over there. There are several towns and villages that surrendered their heavy weapons and medium weapons, and the Syrian army is controlling them without a fight. Meaning, in less than 3 weeks, the army is in control of almost half of Syria south, and this is definitely signaling the army's determination and capability of taking those areas into control after years of war in that area.
Thank you so much for that update out of Damascus. That's Press TV's Muhammad Ali. I'd like to welcome my guest to the program, editor-in-chief of theduran.com, Mr. Alex McCurris out of London, and senior U.S. Congressional Defense Advisor, Mr. Frederick Peterson out of Boston. Thank you both for being with us. So let's start this off in Boston. And Frederick Peterson, how significant is the Syrian army gain in Daraa?
This is a very significant development. This has been an area that's been contested for many years, and many, many thousands have died and have been imposed upon by the hostilities raging around it. It should not be underestimated in its significance. This border crossing area has had a significant Russian presence in this, and the Russian military police and Russian flags fly together with Syrian flags in monitoring the peace that was just concluded. We should say, though, that this peace was not exclusively the result of military action on the ground, but a negotiated settlement where fighters, yes, the battle was won. The point was made by the Syrian National Forces, taking the rebel-held areas, but rebels were allowed to leave the area without being militarily put upon and resettle in other rebel-held areas. This does not mitigate the importance of the victory itself,
okay,
but merely shows this is certainly a preferred way to end a battle.
And
we're very eager to see what this will lead to next.
Indeed. Well, Alex, how do you think Russia was so successful in actually brokering such a deal, which has seen many towns in Dara change sides and have had so many militants surrendering?
I think the key to this is that the power of the Syrian military forces here has been so overwhelming that realistically there was never any possibility of these people successfully resisting the advance of the Syrian army. So given that that is so, this put the Russians in a very strong position to negotiate. Now, the Russians are very skilled at negotiation, and of course they are also able to play on the very good relations which Russia has with Jordan, which is of course the country that neighbors here. And of course the Russians have also got some contacts with Israel, as we know. So they've been able to isolate the more militant groups amongst these fighters. They've been able to speak to those that are perhaps more amenable to negotiation and point out to them that their position is frankly hopeless. And as a result, that backed with the, if you like, the mailed fist of the Syrian army means that more and more of these militant groups have been prepared to accept the Russian velvet glove. And that's how it's been achieved.
Well, Frederick, many analysts are surprised at what they call the speed. The Syrian military has retaken this area after starting this offensive just a little over 2 weeks ago. Your perspective on this side of things?
Well, I concur with much of what your other guest has assessed as the both the consequence and the causes of what has happened. I should say that we cannot mitigate the importance of this development. It is very significant and can form a template, perhaps, for further battles not engaged, rather negotiated. The Russian influence here, as your other guest has pointed out, has been quite skillful, not only in the use of and the participation as an ally militarily on the ground, but in negotiating a settlement which mitigates, certainly does not eliminate, but mitigates the damage to both the primary rebel targets and ancillary damage that is called caused surrounding it. If we are to have a war and to end a war, this is certainly preferable to the total death and destruction that we have seen before. All of us, I think, are surprised with the speed with which this particular operation has ensued. And the Russian relations with both Jordan and with Israel and with Tehran, for that matter, has been very deftly played to a victory on the ground for the sitting Syrian government. And we look to where this is going to go from here, whether this is indeed a template for further operations and a more speedy end to these hostilities, or whether there is going to be some response on the ground and the rebels to try to counter this this new tactic and this new success.
Okay,
the
let me get Alex.
Days will
stay
tell,
with me, Frederick.
I
let me get Alex
days
back
and
in on
weeks,
this.
Not years.
All right.
Yes.
Well, Alex, what is going on that them seems to now be experiencing victory after victory, and what in the dynamics on the ground has changed to force the surrender of terrorists in Dara? So, in general, it just seems to. Everything is sort of in fast forward now. What has changed in your perspective?
Well, what I think has happened is that over the last 3 years, since 2015, we have seen a major upgrade in the military competence of the Syrian army. I mean, it has grown in size, it has grown in effectiveness, it's obtained large numbers of weapons and materials from the Russians and from Iran. It's obtained a great deal of understanding with the help of the Russians and the Iranians of command and control techniques. It is a much better force than it was 3 years ago. It's learned an awful lot during this war. It's also won many very important victories. It's won in Aleppo, as we know, in 2016. It won in Deir ez-Zor in 2017. It recently won in Ghouta and near Damascus. It's got the confidence of victory, which is always a very important factor for every army. And the more territory it controls, the more isolated these militant groups become, the more difficult it becomes for them to resist this revitalized, strengthened, increasingly confident, increasingly efficient, increasingly well-organized army. So that's why we're seeing this major change on the battlefield.
Frederick, Dara is next to the occupied Golan Heights, which, of course, Israel has occupied for many decades. Israel has been helping these armed groups fighting against Damascus via Golan. How important is the retaking of Dara in helping to cut off Tel Aviv's ground and medical support for the terrorists?
Well, I think we're making some major assumptions here. That the terrorists are actually agents of other countries, and in fact, they have been supported by other countries. There has been a significant play on both sides of other countries becoming involved with the activities both of the central government and of the rebels. I think that we find that there has been a mitigation on the, shall we say, the atrocities that had almost become the signature, the hallmark of the sitting regime. That mitigation was done, I think, because of some of the outside influence that was placed upon them to play a greater, I'm speaking of the central government in Syria right now, not the rebels. And there has been a diminution of the support for the rebel forces because there are, as we all know, very many games that are being played and strategies that are being employed. However, there has been, on the part of the central government and their allies, a reduction in the use of terror as a tool of war. And that, I think, is inured to their benefit, along with the very skillful application of military training,
what you're saying that it's an assumption to say that Israel was involved in any way. It's an assumption to say that these terrorists were backed by foreign governments, because if we look at on the ground and we see where the weapons have come from, and we see, for example, we saw the Israelis time and time again, of course, treating the terrorists. They were going into the Golan and getting medical help and, of course, giving technical support. How can you say then that those fighting the Syrian government were not supported by foreign governments, that this is an assumption? How can you say that at this point in time?
I didn't say that. I said that they were and had been supported. Both sides have been supported heavily, was my point, by outside forces. The rebel forces, there are other things at play here rather than just a closed circle of Syria and that which occurs within its borders.
Well, specifically, I'm looking at Israel right now, Frederick. Specifically, Golan Heights, we're looking at this question.
Sure.
And the Israeli support.
Self-defense.
Okay, well, let me get Alex back into this conversation.
If you were
Alex,
designing...
so Frederick says that the Israelis' involvement has been because of self-defense. Your take.
Well, I think that the Israelis played a much more ambitious role in the Syrian war than that says. I think that the Israelis were not alone. We've got to look at the fact that there was a coalition of outside powers: Israel, Turkey, the United States, Saudi Arabia, Jordan, the other Gulf states. They were all involved to a greater or lesser extent, mainly, it must be said, to a greater extent, in trying to support this war in Syria, with the objective, let's be clear about it, of overthrowing the Syrian government. That was the plan. Now, the point is, what has changed to some extent, what has changed, in fact, to a great extent, is that nobody any longer amongst these outside powers seriously believes that the militant groups are going to win. And what we're starting to see is that all the various external supporters are beginning to peel away. The first one to do so was Turkey, which joined in the negotiation with Iran and Russia. It looks as if Jordan is now becoming increasingly disillusioned with this whole affair and is largely disengaged. And it seems that the Israelis themselves, who you were referring to, are now gradually coming to terms with the fact that the Syrian government is going to prevail in this conflict in Syria, and they themselves are now trying to adjust their policies in response to this. But that was certainly not their initial objective or what they were trying to achieve through most of the war.
Well, Alex, do you agree with what Frederick said or disagree? Because he said, of course, all of this started, according to him.
First of all, I mean, Israel is, in my opinion, in occupation of the territory it refers to as the Golan Heights. It has clearly been supporting these militant groups. I don't think there's any doubt about this. And it's been continuing to support them until fairly recently. What has changed now is that because of the dynamic of the conflict, the Israelis are now starting to scale down their ambitions in Syria. They no longer think that they can overthrow the regime in Damascus. And that is what has changed. And that's what's, that is the result of the Syrian army's victories.
What about that, Frederick? Do you think that the United States and its supporters are finally ready to admit and accept that the Syrian government is going to be victorious in this war against terrorists?
I actually, quite honestly, I believe it is looking more and more that way. However, to say that is not to say that Israel or any of the other allies or people who benefited from a coincidence of interests with Israel or with the United States or with any other country has somehow been satisfied. I think that there are other strategic objectives of other countries as well. A land bridge, for instance, between Iraq and Jordan via Israel or via Iraq and Iran through Iraq to Jordan, Iran from Syria, Jordan. That's another national interest. Israel has interests of self-protection. The Golan Heights were not acquired, they were acquired through war, a war of self-defense, and they are held in a war of self-defense. And allies who meet the mutual needs of Israel, as each of the other engaged parties in that war have interests, Israel's largely self-defense, not expansion. Their mission of defending themselves is now probably best met or is being met because there is a more flexible attitude as through the Russians, through the Jordanians, through others, through the central government itself that makes support of rebels hostile to the central government less effective a policy than working with a government, as we have just seen in the last 3 weeks.
All right, you said some interesting statements. Unfortunately, you said some very interesting statements, Frederick. Unfortunately, it's a different show because when we talk about, you're talking about Israel, and then, of course, you said, but they're not trying to expand, but just defend themselves. A whole nother show, but very interesting comments. Alex, your take in general, first of all, and Frederick comments, and also, has the war in Syria been a game changer in redefining geopolitical realities on the ground, and that no longer can Washington act unilaterally or with its allies and just do as they want to in this region?
Well, I think you put your finger on it, actually, because if I can just make a general comment about this, Israel supported, alongst with all the other powers that I discussed, a policy of regime change in Syria. I have no doubt about this. Now, that is an aggressive policy. It is trying to reshape the region to suit your own interests by overthrowing governments in neighboring states. What has happened is that that policy has failed. I mean, it is visibly failing, which is why we see the Syrian army on the roll. It is winning in Daraa, just as it has won in Aleppo, it has won in Deir ez-Zor, it has won in all sorts of places. And what it shows is that, in fact, the geopolitical situation in the Middle East has shifted, and that it is no longer possible for countries like Israel and the United States and states aligned with them to control events in the Middle East to the extent that they once did. And this extraordinary and disastrous period, which began after the end of the Cold War, in which we saw a pattern of regime change in the Middle East,
Alex.
as there was this attempt to change the Middle East, has now ended, and ended in failure.
And on that note, brings us to the end of this program. Thanks so much, both of you, for being with us. Editor-in-Chief of Duran.com, Alex McCurr, is out of London. Senior U.S. Congressional Defense Advisor, Frederick Peterson, out of Boston. As always, viewers, we appreciate you being with us on another debate. I'm Marzia Hashmi, signing out for myself and all the crew right here in Tehran. See you next time.